This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The latest on taking down gas taxes. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill and in states across the country are now looking at ways to temporarily cut taxes on gasoline to take some of the edge off prices, something attracting interest from Democrats and Republicans. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer in Washington. Where are we with this?
Well, first, David, at the federal level, there's legislation that would suspend the federal gas tax. Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock, a Democrat, introduced that bill. It's co-sponsored by five other Democrats, and it would suspend the roughly 18 cent per gallon federal gas tax until January 1st of next year.
Now, the governor of Connecticut yesterday called for a 25 cent cut in that state's gas tax.
Right. And more than half a dozen other states are considering a gas tax suspension, including Maryland and Georgia. Maryland legislators are scheduled to meet on this today. Georgia's suspension would take effect in May. And the Florida legislature just approved a 1 month gas tax suspension. It won't start until October, though, when the tourist season is winding down.
Got to ask, would all of this trickle through to save consumers money?
There's a lot of debate over that. The politicians who support the temporary gas tax suspension make it sound like the prices at the pump would go down immediately, but that's not clear. And some Democrats who oppose these measures say there's no guarantee oil companies would pass the savings on to consumers. The federal bill would require Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen to monitor companies and take unspecified enforcement actions to ensure they do share any savings with consumers.
All right, so they have to monitor this. Nancy, thank you. The wholesale price of crude oil is down sharply. Now, you don't want crude oil in your car, and the average cost of refined gasoline nationwide, $4.32 a gallon. What's with California, always among the highest of gas prices? Experts always tell me, well, it's a different market. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has the real reasons.
There are three main reasons gas prices are so high in California.
Number one is California is a fuel island. So we don't have pipelines, for example, coming from Texas providing crude.
Kevin Slagle at the Western States Petroleum Association says California produces about 30% of the oil it needs.
The other 70% is imported from largely foreign sources all over the world.
And shipped in, which costs more and makes it more vulnerable to supply chain issues. Number two, Severin Borenstein at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business says California has higher taxes than other states.
Our excise tax on gasoline is 51 cents a gallon compared to the rest of the country that averages about 28. We also have environmental fees.
And number three, he says,
for about 25 years, California has been using a cleaner burning gasoline than the rest of the country that has helped reduce pollution,
but is more expensive to produce, which, of course, also drives up the price. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Also, the Federal Reserve begins its two-day meeting today that will end with an interest rate decision tomorrow. I spoke to economist David Kelly, chief global strategist at JP Morgan Funds.
It's kind of ironic that we regard $96 a barrel of oil as a relief, but it does suggest that markets are assuming there will be some sort of stability emanating from this horrific situation in Ukraine.
Now, the big decision on interest rates from the Fed is tomorrow afternoon. They're going to go up. They're probably going to go up 0.25%. The really interesting discussion is, what about the rest of the year? And the Fed's got its work cut out for it, as always.
Well, it is. But the Federal Reserve feels like they've got to get going here. And while there's a lot of uncertainty, they really feel like they need to raise interest rates. So I think they'll raise rates 0.25% tomorrow, but they'll probably keep going. We may get 4 or 5 rate hikes this year and some more next year, because we really do need to get back to normal interest rates if the economy is at full employment and inflation's high.
Again, the irony, though, we're facing higher prices. The Fed wants to raise the cost of borrowing. yet that is the mechanism to get on top of inflation.
Well, yes, and you can't really fix inflation in the short run by raising interest rates. But what will happen is over time, supply chains will loosen. Over time, we'll see more oil produced, more food produced, and we should get inflation to come down anyway. But we shouldn't have interest rates at 0%. That's very unusual. And I think it's important for us to get back to normal interest rates if we want to have a normal economy in the long run.
David Kelly, The Economist, Chief Global Strategist, JP Morgan Funds. Thank you very much.
Many thanks.
Much of Russia's commercial and military sectors rely on foreign parts, repairs, technological know-how, a big vulnerability for Russia. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more.
Take Russia's aviation sector, for example. Russia relies heavily on planes and aircraft parts made by Boeing and Airbus, which have halted shipments to Russian carriers.
They can keep operating for 2 or 3 months, but at some point they're going to need new parts.
Tim Fry is a political science professor at Columbia University. He says it's not just aircraft hardware.
Even the booking and reservation systems are often integrated deeply into foreign companies and relies on foreign technology.
Same goes for the country's manufacturing sector and its computer equipment. Fry says the U.S. ban on exports of semiconductor chips to Russia is already hurting Russian manufacturers.
Lada, which is the Russian version of GM, the largest automaker in the country, announced that it was going to have to shut down temporarily because it didn't have the microprocessors it needed to produce its cars.
Moscow has been trying to reduce its dependence on imported technology, says Julian Ringhoff, a visiting fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations.
This is true for a lot of the high-end technologies where basically companies with good ties to the Kremlin get subsidies which are meant to help Russia develop technological capabilities.
But Ringhoff says that favoritism has made it harder for Russia to innovate and build up its high-tech expertise.
It generally doesn't work out to pick winners at the beginning of an innovation process. You actually need proper competition, and you don't really see this in Russia as much.
Russia could turn to China to help fill the gaps, says Samuel Bendett, an analyst at the research company CNA.
That would be good enough in some areas, but that's not going to be a wholesale replacement. It's going to be a replacement of maybe some components.
And if Russia decides to go it alone?
The question is how long this switchover can take place. Will it take years? Will it take possibly decades? Is there even time?
In the meantime, Bendett says Russia could access foreign technology by importing it through sellers on the black market. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
We also talk in depth today with a political scientist who spent years unraveling the complex web of Russian energy lines. She says Russia making good on its warning about turning off its gas supplies to Western Europe would be a very complex undertaking. Marketplace.org if you missed that on the air today. Our producers are Rose Conlon, Meredith Gerritsen, Stephen Ryan, Alex Schroeder, and Erica Soderstrom. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.